Good evening. This is Susan Gingrich, the Herb Lady, and tonight we have Thomas Easley with us. Tonight we're just planning to chat about stuff, I think, about natural healing. Before we start, we should do a disclaimer. I think we've kind of neglected to do that. Anything you hear tonight is for educational purposes only, and if you need a diagnosis, please see your medical professional. Now, Thomas.
Yes.
You've had quite a week, and so have I. I just went up to Frank Meese's meeting up in Springfield this evening, and he chose for a topic stress and how that affects our health. And I was sitting there thinking about what is stressing me the most has to do with our political situation with, natural health and in Ohio, trying to get an exemption to the medical practices law so that people have to prove that there's damage done before they can take anyone who's doing anything besides a regular MD practice to court, you see.
Right.
And the object is a simple exemption law. And I was just thinking how stressed I was feeling with all that. And then I was going through my mind about some of the things that I've heard even just today, from people about objections that they have to herbs. For example, one person came in here today and they said that they told their doctor about something that they had done, and the doctor said, "Well, if it was any good, I would know about it." And I was going through my head about, what have we got going on in our culture that the irony is Thomas and I both went to China, and there we saw this culture that is, has four times the population as the United States. When the communist government took over, you have people now who are terrified of their own government, and yet they decided as a government to allow the common sense traditional medicine that China is known for to continue because it is very inexpensive, everybody knows how to do it, and people stay well. Okay,
well, the only reason they've allowed that to continue is because they've not realized how profitable pharmaceuticals can be.
It's just a matter of time, isn't it? Yeah.
Yep.
So you've got this culture over here. On one hand, with people terrified of their government, they can't do anything to change laws. They can't even meet in public. That's a criminal offense. And then we live in a country where we're supposed to have freedom of speech. It's the big deal.
Right.
We're allowed to have public meetings. We're allowed to air things like this on the radio and speak our opinion about things. And we're supposed to be able to change our laws when we want to. We live in a democracy, right? We're the ones with the freedom, right?
That's what.
And yet, go ahead, Thomas.
No, I'm going to let you continue before I start my rant.
Okay, you got a rant to go. And yet, here we are with a prejudice that is so ingrained, coming through our media, coming through the whole system that we're in, against using common sense, against using, let's call it scientific research on the individual. Any scientific research that's supposed to have any credence has to be, a full double-blind study with 2 million participants, and it costs $40,000. And we don't even require that really of our drugs as they're released. They're not really credibly proven out to be safe, and yet that's the whole idea.
Yeah, if they were proven to be safe, then 60% of the drugs that are taken off the markets wouldn't be taken off. A new drug, when it's put on the market, has a 7 to 10 year life before 60% of them get taken off again.
Because they turn out to be unsafe.
Right.
Now, here's
big guinea pigs.
Yeah, and here's the difference between a natural approach and a pharmaceutical approach. I was sitting here with a client today, and, the only reason he came to me was because the doctors told him they couldn't do anything for him. Mm-hmm. Right? And this happens so often, doesn't it, with you? I mean, when it's hopeless and there's no more surgery or drugs that will help, and they come and see the herbalist because why not? There's nothing to lose here, right?
Nothing to lose, right.
Uh-huh. So he's got a blocked artery to his leg, and there's an inch and a quarter stone in an artery there. Now, his body has developed blood vessels around that stone that the doctor has shown them on the MRIs, the x-rays, and so forth. And so they don't recommend surgery because his body has already done the work to build, you know, a bypass around it.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So there's nothing to be done, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So he comes to me. Now he's willing to do what I have to say. But he's already talked to the doctor about it, and, you know, his doctor told him that if there was anything good about herbs, he would know about them, which was just really kind of amusing.
When you have rules and regulations for medical practice established by the AMA that doctors have to follow, in a way you can feel sorry for them because they've got their hands tied behind their back. They're not allowed by AMA regulations to recommend anything but prescription drugs or surgery.
And most people in this country are not aware of that.
And therefore,
when their doctor says, oh, I would know about it if it was any good, they believe that.
Right. Even if the doctor did know about it, he wouldn't be allowed to tell you. I have a number of doctor clients that come to me and that take herbs and vitamins and minerals, but they can't recommend them to their patients because they risk getting their license pulled.
Right, and I have several doctors who I work with who care enough about their patients to send them on over to me when they can't talk about something that they know is going to work. So they send them over and say, ask her about flaxseed oil.
Right.
Okay? Or ask her about something for the blood pressure that could help. So, you know, what we have to do, because we have to stay legal, is to not diagnose. In other words, we don't name diseases.
Mm-hmm.
And we work with supporting systems in the body. That's how we're staying legal. But yesterday or today, I got an email saying that the FDA has hired 1,000 new people to go out and make sure that people like us are not doing dangerous things. And
did you get the update on the adverse reaction reporting?
What's that?
That
new law?
Yeah, you did get the update where they did pass that into law?
They did. Oh, my.
Did you? Yes. Let me tell you how they passed it into law. At 1:05 in the morning, they took a vote on it, okay? And it was voted down. This bill has been introduced 5 separate times. It's been shot down every time. Okay?
Now, what it does, folks, just so you know, is this bill will make it so that an herb company has to report to whom, you know?
The FDA.
To the FDA any time that they get a report of an adverse reaction to anything that they are selling. Right now, that's not true of a drug company. And it was kind of shoved down people's throats in an effort to say, well, there won't be a lot of adverse reactions, and therefore we'll be proving that herbs are safe and so forth. But what it's going to do is draw attention, and there's no science about it. It's simply if a person decides that they've had an adverse reaction to it, they report it, it has to be reported back.
Right. There's no testing. You know, they don't go to their doctor, to their hospital, and get blood work or something like that to show that the herb or vitamin or mineral has caused the problem. It's just whatever they think.
Yeah, it's whatever they think.
They take a vote on this at 1 o'clock in the morning, and it's shot down. They reintroduce it at 2:30 in the morning, and it's shot down. They reintroduce it at 3 in the morning, and it's shot down. They ask for a quorum vote. You're supposed to have 5 minutes to get all those votes in. Most everybody had left by then, except for the senator's friends who had introduced the bill. It was still shot down. The guy kept the vote open, a 5-minute vote he kept open an extra 15 minutes until all his friends could get back to the room and vote against it, and that's how it got passed through.
Oh,
now,
my gosh.
That's just criminal.
Dirty politics.
Extremely, yeah. And, you know, when you're looking already at guidelines by the AMA, the doctors have to follow. You have to take into consideration that 80% of the people that leave the AMA that are on their board of directors, when they leave, get consulting jobs with pharmaceutical companies making 6 and 7 figures a year. So you have to stay in line with what the pharmaceutical companies want if you want a cushy retirement. So only 20% of the people on the board of directors at the AMA actually have the guts to say what's right. 80% of them say what the pharmaceutical companies want them to say because they know they'll be getting money when they retire.
And then you have to understand that the FDA, you have to be an MD to be on the FDA.
Mm-hmm.
So it is It is a, I guess I hate to use that word. I'm going to see if I can find another word besides that. Y'all hear it. But it's definitely weighted to one side.
Yeah.
Now, how do we go about keeping the door open to a natural approach to health in this country with that kind of thing going on?
We put a big disclaimer in front of everything that we say, and we teach people how to use the weeds in their backyards to fix themselves.
Right.
That's my idea.
And I got lots of weeds. I love my dandelion and my plantain and all that. And the thing is, it's so simple once you get a hold of it. Now, let's play around with this idea tonight, Thomas. What are some of the objections or those weird things in people's heads about this propaganda that they've been fed? Basically, what comes out in their thinking or in their speech? Like, for example, all the time I'll get, well, I took your herbs, yeah, and I don't have any more aches and pains, yeah, but it's just a coincidence. Have you heard that?
Yep.
Why would they say it's a coincidence when if they took an aspirin and it killed their pain, it would not be a coincidence?
Right.
So how do we fix that line of thinking?
Well, it's a cultural mindset that I don't think is going to change anytime soon. It's really hard to get the average person to think for themselves when they're bombarded with, you know, media campaigns designed to convince them to eat certain things or to take certain medications or they have certain problems. I mean, when you're talking about companies that spend billions of dollars every year to figure out how people think and then adjust their marketing campaigns for that.
Oh, and then on top of that, you know, in the food business, we're adding additives that addict people to the foods all the time, including cow's milk. I talked to a lady this week who spent some time in a cow's milk factory, and she watched the chemist putting in chemicals that would make the milk addictive to us.
Yeah.
Okay, so that goes on, and that doesn't have to be labeled. The FDA doesn't require it because it's small amounts, okay?
Right.
So with that going on, you know, and yet in Ohio, we've had this issue with going on with raw milk right now. You can't buy raw milk. You have to own a piece of the herd, and just recently they entrapped an Amish farmer by begging for the milk. He finally gave it to them in a bucket of his own, and then they got him for mislabeling the container, by not properly labeling the container.
Wow.
And that's a big deal that's going on here in Ohio right now. So, you know, we're seeing the criminals, literally, are people who are trying to use common sense and use natural, close to nature products. What a strange thing to have for criminals in a society that is, we have drugs on the streets, we have murders going on all the time, and, you know, and yet they take the time out to make an Amish farmer selling raw milk a criminal.
Right. I heard an interesting saying and statistic today. It said that the $1.5 trillion junk food industry finances the $1 trillion pharmaceutical industry. And they do. It might take a year or 2 years or 5 years or 10 years, but you keep eating the junk food, empty food that's being pushed down our throats through marketing and advertising, and you're going to wind up taking a pharmaceutical. It's going to make you sick.
Yeah, and I had a student in my class at Columbus State 2 or 3 years ago who was inheriting the family business, and it's the middleman grocery business. And he said that what they do is they take in perfectly good raw foods, and they bread it or they package it and put it in, you know, cellophane and individually wrapped fish sticks that are breaded or whatever it takes. But any step in processing doubles the price to the customer.
Right.
That's how they make their money. So anytime you're eating a processed food, oftentimes it's putting money in some middleman's hands. And believe me, along the way, they do lots of testing, not on what nutrients are in that food or what's going to benefit your body, but on whether or not they can make you become addicted to it and buy it over and over again.
Sure.
And he was very embarrassed by what his family did. And he was an organic gardener, and he just kind of went off into hermitage over there. He was embarrassed by that. But that's what we have available on our shelves here in this country.
Mm-hmm.
I make a point when I go to the grocery store to stay on the outer aisles. I go into the fresh produce section, and I foray into one other aisle where the oils are, and where rice cakes are, but they're kind of empty calories too, and stay on the outside of the grocery store. It's a shorter trip, for one thing. You're going to get some real foods, and if you put it in the bag yourself, you're better off. Okay, let's go back to some of these objections that we hear a lot. People will come and they'll get a program, they'll get some supplements and so forth, and then they don't use it because the doctor says, I don't know enough about this. It can't be good for you.
Right. Here's the thing. Doctors have to memorize hundreds of, probably thousands of common diseases that they see on a regular basis. Okay? Then they're taught the medicines to treat those in medical school. However, by the time they get out of medical school, all these prescriptions have improved or changed some way. So they're basically educated by the pharmaceutical companies as to what the products will do. Okay? And they don't have time to learn the herbs that might help. And then even if they did learn them, they couldn't use them.
No, they're not allowed.
They're not allowed.
I heard Carl Fowle speak one time, and he was talking about his pharmacist, and he said that if you get sick, don't do it in July, because that's when the new medical students are coming out into the hospitals, and they're interning, and they don't know the first thing about what drugs to put together. And he said he was constantly sending back notes to the doctor saying, if your intended outcome is death, then I would put these two drugs together, but if not, don't do them. In other words, the pharmacy has to teach the doctors, too, what drugs to use and not use.
Right.
And drugs work in an entirely different way from herbs. Let's get into a little educational segment here, Thomas. What I heard from one doctor's mouth was that drugs replace one symptom with another. In other words, if you've got pain, you take a painkiller, and then you'll have other problems instead of pain.
Right.
Okay? Whereas this... Yeah, go ahead.
I've heard doctors say if the plant was so powerful, they'd make it into a drug. Now, I've got to give the pharmaceutical industry credit. They do extract lots of specific nutrients and phytochemicals out of plants and turn them into drugs. And by doing that, they take away all the natural enzymes and buffers that are there and make them dangerous. I mean, if you look at digitalis, that is simply, and that's what 90% of all modern heart medications are based on, and that's basically an extract of foxglove. Now, foxglove is poisonous. Everybody knows that, but in small dosages, we'll do the same thing without the bad side effects, like the liver damage that occurs. So a lot of pharmaceuticals are derivatives of the natural, but the problem comes in that they concentrate the one part of it so strong that it overrides all the natural buffers and things that keep it from hurting your body. So they make it stronger so it works faster, because we need instant gratification in this country. But by doing that, they make it poisonous.
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
You're breaking up a little bit. At least for me.
Anyway, go ahead.
You're not going to lose your battery, are you?
No, I'm fine.
Okay, good. All right. Okay, go on.
So, yes, I've heard the argument that medications are simply plant extracts, and some of them are. Estimates vary between 40 and 60% of medications are plant extracts.
Okay. But most of that, don't they take the active ingredient in the plant and imitate it into a chemical byproduct?
Turn it into a chemical byproduct, right. But some of the best plants... some of the best plant medicines, at least, can't be turned into pharmaceuticals because we simply don't have the technology to understand the chemistry of the plant.
Right. And like pawpaw, which I talked about for an entire show one time,
mm-hmm.
has 50 active ingredients in it. We don't know how they work together.
Mm-hmm.
So to imitate that in petrochemicals is nearly impossible in the first place. And how does it work? Okay, so all right, so we got a difference in how they work. And I remember one doctor saying to us one time, let me think of the conversation. He said, I had asked him if it would be okay for my husband to take CoQ10 along with the drugs that he had given him for his congestive heart failure. And his comment was, it can't hurt any. And I thought, he dropped his sentence oddly there. What did he mean by that? And I said, what do you mean? It can't hurt anything. And so that's a put-down, you know. And he said, oh, well, we figure that a drug can't do you any good if it can't kill you. And I was really stunned by that. I didn't realize that there was that kind of an attitude in the medical world. And I said, well, you and I are on a different page. I've been taking vitamins and supplements for years. You know, everybody takes a multiple vitamin and so forth. And I just figured that the body will heal itself if you give it the right nutrients.
Right.
You know, and he, you know, he wasn't on that page at all. It was that you have to be able to kill off the bad thing in your body by using some high-powered poison. And if you think about it, modern medicine works on that principle, that we kill off the germ, we kill off the cancer cell, we kill off the whatever bad thing is. And if we can't kill it off in time, like gangrene, we cut it off. And that's called surgery. So, you know, it's all about getting rid of the evil thing in your body. It used to be in the Middle Ages that was the evil spirits that was in your body, and they did it by bloodletting and taking out the evil in your body. So that same thinking has continued into Western medicine's practices of finding some heavy-duty poison. And back in the 1800s, the doctors would carry mercury around in their bag along with a saw. And now we just have this boatload of poisonous chemicals that can do you great damage. Aspirin. Now, there's an objection. And everybody who comes in here, they'll say, well, I'm taking aspirin because my doctor told me to prevent a heart attack.
Right.
And I have a great objection with that, too. You want to say anything about aspirin?
Well, I mean, if you don't mind swallowing coal tar, then you're fine.
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. If you don't mind swallowing coal tar, you're fine. But if you plan on actually absorbing some of the nutrients from the foods that you eat, don't take aspirin, because that stuff's going to coat your intestines and keep you from absorbing nutrients.
It does. It does damage to the small intestine, to the lining of the stomach as well. And I heard from an actual MD here in Ohio who told me that all of the NSAID family of painkillers, and that would be Aleve, ibuprofen, Motrin IV, and aspirin, are all damaging to the kidneys as well. And she said when some of the painkillers started to become over-the-counter, available, you know, without prescription, that they were aware that this would start causing all kinds of kidney problems in people.
Yeah.
And yet that was never mentioned on the media, was it? We never heard about that. But we'll see people go into kidney problems once they start taking those painkillers. And people are so programmed that these are safe just simply because they're over-the-counter that they pop them like candy all day long when they've got a headache.
Well, I think that modern pharmaceuticals are headed in the direction that tobacco was headed 50 years ago when nobody knew that it was bad for you, or when people did know that it was bad for you, but the information just wasn't released. And then there was this huge backlash where all of a sudden, you know, tobacco causes cancer. And I think the same thing will happen with pharmaceuticals. Right now, you know, over-the-counters are considered safe and, you know, there's no known side effects that are discussed in polite society and things like that. But I think in several years, there'll be a huge backlash against all pharmaceuticals, especially over-the-counters.
Let's go a little further with this. You want to say what you might say to somebody about aspirin or what you would do instead if you were concerned about a heart attack, for example, and that's usually why people are taking an aspirin.
Well, I tell them that thinning the blood down is one way to prevent a heart attack, and you can do that with natural substances like fish oil. You can do that with natural substances like willow bark, okay, which is what aspirin was originally derived from. However, the most important thing you can do is reduce inflammation in the body, which is what's going to cause the heart disease to begin with. And
right.
Inflammation comes from the common food allergies and leaky gut syndrome. I mean, if you avoid wheat, dairy, and your xenoestrogens, then you should be fine.
And white sugar.
And white sugar, yeah, sugar, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
I see, I always forget about that one because I just assume that people know sugar is bad, but I'm surprised constantly when I give people the diet that I give them, my beginner's diet, that eliminates all the, you know, commonly eaten bad foods, and they say, oh, well, I can still have Twinkies? No, everybody knows that they're bad for you. Why would you even ask that?
Mm-hmm. You can take it out of the wrapper and it'll still be there 10 years from now. So how is that food?
Right. If the food did not exist 100 years ago, don't eat it.
Yeah. Another one that I tell people is that I heard Jack Richardson talk one time about preventing heart disease, and he said that it's really important to have calcium and magnesium available to the heart. Calcium is the squeeze in anything in your body that squeezes, and magnesium is the release.
Right.
So he said that 75% of heart attacks are a squeeze that didn't let go. So what do you need? You need more magnesium in your system, too. And magnesium will help to keep your pH balanced. It'll help to keep your muscles relaxed. It'll help to keep your bowels moving because, again, you have peristaltic motion, which is a squeeze and a release. So calcium is the squeeze, magnesium is the release, and things move through.
Right.
So that's something that probably everybody in this country should be taking is some extra magnesium.
90% of Americans are deficient in magnesium.
How many?
90%.
Wow. Where'd you get that figure? That's interesting.
That was in the Lancet, the British Medical Journal.
Wow.
90% of industrialized society are deficient in
magnesium. Wow. I believe that. And just everybody who comes here gets magnesium.
Yeah.
I'm a firm believer in that. Speaking of the Lancet and research, there's another major objection that people have. They've heard somewhere that there's not enough research on herbs. Okay, that just comes through as this nice little statement. Well, there's not any research on herbs. How can you be telling me that it'll work, you know?
5,000 years. That's how much research has been done on herbs, 5,000 years worth.
But it isn't Western research, and it's not double-blind studies.
There is double-blind studies with Western herbs, and they're automatically tossed out because they can't be accepted by the AMA.
Right.
I mean, and see, here's the problem. The Journal of the American Medical Association, JAMA, came out with a study in 2004 that said that your average doctor was 17 years behind not the research, but the journals, and the journals are 5 years behind the research, which means that right now if you go to the doctor, you're going to get recommended drugs from the 1980s.
Yeah.
You know,
and they do the same drug for the same symptom all day long.
Right.
They never look at your whole self and what caused it. I heard Frank Nisi say tonight that somebody asked him about cluster headaches, and he said, each one of those is different. You have to find out why the person has the headaches.
Yeah.
You can't just give a pain reliever that covers it all. You know, that's really skimming the surface.
Right. Well, we're all biochemically different. Now, we all have, you know, a pancreas and a liver and a kidney and stuff like that, but we're all just a little bit different in how our body reacts to nutrients or drugs or anything. And to say that one remedy fits all is just ludicrous. I tell people all the time that come into me for migraines or weight loss or common ailments, I tell them all the time, I say, I do not have a magic pill. If I had a magic pill for all of your problems where one pill a day would fix it, I would be sitting in the Bahamas sipping on a Mai Tai because I'd be filthy rich.
And that's why we need to be able to continue to have people available to individuals who want to make a difference in their health and who want somebody to be able to help think it through with them as to why their particular situation is in such a shape. I remember when I had the chronic fatigue, I was on the couch for 2 years. I had to throw away my calendar because I couldn't count on my body to be present for any meeting, so I just quit scheduling myself in anything. I would read books, but I could not find anyone in the state who would talk to me about what I needed to do.
Yeah.
And I vowed that I would start making good information available to people, or at least not be afraid, you know, to start doing research myself. And I did come out of it, and that's what I've done, is to become kind of a researcher for anybody who, you know, really does want to do something about things. And we found all kinds of intriguing ways that the body works, and that you can help the body to do its own healing. We haven't killed anybody yet that I know. But that's kind of my mission, is to make sure that it stays available.
Yeah.
And let's think through, how can we arm people in dealing with this kind of madhouse that they're in? And you know, if they have a health issue, how do you find good help?
Don't go to your doctor. You've got to be able to think for yourself, and you've got to be able to be willing to take responsibility for your own health. You have to realize that it's not your doctor's job to get you healthy. It's not your, you know, spiritual leader's job to get you healthy. It is your job.
It's your body. It's your vehicle, and you have to keep it in good shape. So when the doctor gives you advice, you say to yourself, that's his opinion and his advice. Now I have to decide what I'm going to do about this.
Right.
And I've had people come to me and they'll say, this is one that I'm kind of on a what's bugging me thing tonight.
Yeah.
They come to me and they say, oh, I'm taking this for cholesterol. That's another big one. Lipitor for cholesterol or something for cholesterol. And I'll say, what are your numbers? Oh, I don't know. The doctor said it was high.
Yeah.
You run into that one?
Yeah, no, I get that all the time. I was just thinking of a comment that Kim Ballas made to me one time.
What was that?
I was talking with her about a patient that had went to the doctor and got on cholesterol medication, and I said, what do I tell my patient to do? Because his numbers really aren't that elevated. And she said, when a doctor opens his mouth and tells you that you need a cholesterol medication, run away. She said it's that simple. She said cholesterol medications are not necessary in America at all. They only cause problems because cholesterol is a symptom, not a causal factor of heart disease.
There you go.
Cholesterol has never caused heart disease.
Okay. She said one time in a class that if you go below 170, that you're setting yourself up for cancer. And if you go below 140, you'll actually see more heart disease than over 215.
Right. Well,
I've started saying, you know, tell me what your numbers are. Otherwise, I'm not interested in dealing with what the doctor says is a problem with cholesterol.
Well, here's another thing. Good cholesterol. Okay?
Yeah?
I had somebody come to me and their good cholesterol was 95, and their doctor told them that they'd never have to worry about heart disease because their good cholesterol was so high.
Yeah.
And I say to myself, yeah, that's absolutely correct. You don't have to worry about heart disease. What you have to worry about is estrogen-based cancer because the top range for your good cholesterol is 65. Anything above that indicates an excess of estrogen in the body.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. And then you get breast cancer.
And then you get breast cancer, uterine cancer, or prostate cancer.
Okay, and that takes us back to my comparison to the two cultures of China and the U.S. And when we were in Shanghai, I picked up a newspaper that said that they were really worried about this increase in breast cancer in China. It's gone from 43 per 100,000 to 70-something per 100,000. In this country, it's 1 in 5.
Right.
So, yeah, we know all about estrogen-based cancers here. You know, it's...
Yep. So
and...
you can... Not only can you assume that people with high good cholesterol are going to be prone to estrogen-based cancers, but you can assume that they're going to be PMSing all month, whether it's guys or girls. That much estrogen, man, the mood swings.
Right. So we really need to look at those numbers and look at them a different way.
Right.
And I told someone recently, you know, I said, get your numbers from the doctor, and she said, well, I don't know. I said, you own those numbers.
Yeah.
You pay for the test, and you get to have the numbers. So you just tell them that you want a copy of those numbers.
Right.
And it was like she was afraid to even ask because she was afraid they would want to know why, you know, and all this. They're your numbers. This is part of taking responsibility for your health.
Right.
And, you know, asking a doctor, you're not asking a doctor permission to do anything. You're asking his opinion on things. then you take that into consideration and go get another opinion on the same thing.
And contrary to popular opinion, doctors are not God.
They're not? Wow. I'm not either. And I'll tell people that. I say, I am here to encourage you to take full responsibility for your health.
Well,
and
that's something that I make it a point to tell all of my clients. No doctor, no herbalist, no anybody that you've ever heard of has ever cured anybody of anything. The body fixes itself. You get cut, the Band-Aid that you put on it doesn't cure the cut. It simply lets the body fix itself a little bit faster. Okay, same thing with herbs, same thing with anything that helps you. All you're doing is giving the body the building blocks it needs to fix itself.
Right. Okay, here's another objection. Why can't Medicare cover the cost of this? Or why can't my insurance cover the cost of it? It's too expensive because I can get Ritalin for $2 a bottle or whatever because I've got health insurance.
Oh, me.
You don't get that one very often. Oh, maybe we should move to something more upbeat.
I really hate to be so incredibly negative for a full hour.
I'm sorry. No, cheer up. I mean, this is just, let's arm people with the answer to those objections the next time they come through their heads. Okay, now here's what I tell people on that. If we were to let the insurance companies pay for these herbs, they would be gone in a few weeks because they would become a prescription. There would need to be a prescription written for it, and as soon as that happens and doctors know nothing about it, it will no longer be available to you.
Right.
So it has to be out of pocket until we can work out something legally that would cover it. And I understand Clinton was working on something, Clinton Miller.
Yes.
But I don't know the details on it. So you just have to all be patient about that. Now, let's talk about the cost and the difference in cost. One of the big objections that I hear a lot of times is, well, herbs aren't regulated. Therefore, there's this wide range of quality between one brand and another. So what I say to that one...
That's true.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that's true. I've used certain brands of herbs that one bottle I would get great results with and another bottle I would get horrible results with or no results at all. So there is, you know, there is a difference in quality of herbs, vitamins, minerals, just like there's a difference in quality of food. I mean, that's why you have grade A beef and grade B beef and stuff like that. What you have to do, what you have to understand is that the government doesn't have to control every single aspect of herbs, vitamins, and minerals because the market will work itself out. And it has. You've seen tons and tons of low quality, inferior natural products go by the wayside simply because they don't work. So you need to stick with a company that's got a good reputation and has been around for a while. You know, if you're with a company that's been around 25, 30 years, then they're around for a reason. It's got to work.
Yeah, and there's just such a wide range of quality. I've had people come in and they've got arthritis or joint pain, and they'll say, have you tried glucosamine or chondroitin, MSM with that? And they'll say, oh, yeah, I tried it, and it didn't work.
Right.
I know right away that they've gone to a cheap store to get it, or they've gone to the cheapest place to find the glucosamine. When I give them a Nature Sunshine bottle, two or three days later, they call me all happy about it because their joints don't hurt anymore. And I don't want to sound like a commercial, but there really is a difference in quality, and you have to find, even if, you know, any company that works for you, stick with it because they're going to have a higher quality.
Well, and it's like that in every part of our society. I mean, would you honestly go to a doctor that charged $2 a visit? I wouldn't.
No, of course not.
You get what you pay for.
Right.
That's just all there is to it. You know, you don't go to a dentist that has his office set up in a cardboard box. Mm-hmm. You want to go to a nice office where the dentist charges a lot of money, because anything that he puts in your mouth, you want it to be good. Same thing with herbs. If you want it to be good and you're going to put it in your mouth, pay the money for it. Or don't do it.
Did you hear about the study that they did where, I think it was the Nature Sunshine Labs. Then they have a very good quality control department there.
They do.
Mm-hmm. They took a bottle off a shelf from a major store in this country, and it was St. John's wort. And they found in studying it that there was no active ingredient left in it.
Right.
And I remember, I think it was Jack Richardson telling us, he said, that's nearly impossible to have happen naturally. It won't come up with no active ingredient in it. He said they had to have taken that out to sell off to another company.
Else.
Yeah, to boost some other product. He said the sad part of that is that, you know, yes, this major company has a cheaper St. John's wort on the shelf, and people rush to buy it because they think they're getting the same thing just because the bottle says it's in there. But what the sad part is that somebody takes that and they get no benefit from it, and so they decide, they conclude on the spot that herbs don't work.
Right.
And don't try any more after that either. So what the population needs to know is, A, take control of your own, or take responsibility for your own health, and B, use your brain. It was put at the top of your body to think about the rest of it. And make an intelligent choice as to which product you do put in there. And then C, please, stay awake to the results and don't just write them off as coincidence just because they came easy. In other words, do your own science and do your own reading of studies. One of the things that bugs me, well, it doesn't really bug me, because I know what the game is, but, you know, on the media, you'll hear these stories. It'll just be a headline of vitamin C causes cancer or vitamin A causes cancer. Both of those have come up in the news in the last 4 or 5 years. You have to look at the study if you're going to believe it. And unfortunately, you know, those are put out there so that the general population gets that herbs are not safe. See, that's the whole idea of that. But if you go and look at the study from which they gleaned that headline, you'll find that there's no basis for truth there.
Right.
And well, and the other thing is to learn to read studies and use common sense. It's real simple to read them. You know, you can tell good research from bad research.
Here's your problem. How many pharmaceutical commercials are there on TV?
Oh, my goodness. And then when they have to list all the side effects, it makes me want to rush right out and buy it.
Yeah, well, pharmaceutical commercials make up, depending on the network, but in your major network TV stations, they make up 40 to 60% of the ads. Okay. Now, why would a major network feature something that is effective and would drop the sales of somebody that's buying an ad for hundreds of thousands of dollars on their network?
Now,
if they lose money, they don't buy the ads.
Right. And I have a brother who's an economist, and one time, just to make conversation, I said, John, you know, do we still have gold in Fort Knox, and, you know, we have a gold-based economy? He said, Susan, our economy is based on pharmaceuticals.
Yeah.
Our economy, you get this? Our economy is based on pharmaceuticals. And so I sat back that day, and I thought, well, then what I'm about is to pull the rug out from under our economy. But I don't think that would happen. If people took hold of their own health and, you know, didn't have to spend $185,000 to die of cancer in a hospital or whatever, our economy would be in much better shape.
Yep. And I want to go ahead and state here that I don't think all pharmaceuticals are bad. I don't think doctors are bad.
No, I'm not. Yeah, okay, good.
I have a love for the medical profession. I think that In certain situations, they do amazing jobs that no herbalist could ever do. You know, if you get in a car wreck, don't go to an herbalist. Go to the hospital.
I want an emergency room. Set my bones, and then I'll go home and take the stuff I know that'll make them heal faster.
You know, hey, I want the morphine when you get through with the surgery, you know, knock me out till most of the pain is gone, then I'll go home and deal with the side effects.
Mm-hmm.
That's my
really
thing.
That's really where modern medicine shines, is in emergency situations.
Yeah, it really is. And there's been some great breakthroughs. I mean, I am adamantly opposed to your Prilosex and your proteonics and things like that that destroy stomach acid, because they're handed out like candy in doctor's offices. But
that is the number one selling drug in America, by the way.
Well, it's been a lifesaver for thousands of people that have been rushed to the hospital with bleeding ulcers. I don't know if you heard Hugo Rodier say, but his father died from a bleeding ulcer.
Okay.
Before Prilosec and proteonics came out. If that would have been available, an IV of proteonics would have stopped the bleeding and his father would have lived.
Okay.
So modern medicine has made huge accomplishments. I mean, look at our infant mortality rates. They've dropped so far in the past even 30 years. We're doing a really good job at emergency medicine, but we're doing a really bad job at treating chronic illness and preventative medicine.
One in five women with breast cancer. And now what's this thing with a vaccination for girls at age 12 for cervical cancer?
Right. Well, that's... that's such baloney. I mean, when you look at HPV, what you have to realize is that all of the major research indicates that the human body will throw off the virus within 5 years. Okay? You've got 67, 68, in the upper 60s, lower 70s, different types of HPV, of this virus. Okay? Two or three of those types have been linked to cervical cancer. Okay? But the same viruses that show up in non-industrialized societies aren't linked to cervical cancer simply because they don't have the xenoestrogens. So it's a combination of everything. You know, people ask me on a regular basis, well, you know, if I drink a Coca-Cola a day, will it kill me? No, but if you eat the Twinkie that goes with it, and, you know, the ice cream every night, and the beef and chicken pumped up on steroids and hormones and antibiotics, if you combine all that together, sure it will. Now, did the Coke cause it? No, but it contributed to it. Same thing with this virus. It can contribute, but it's not going to cause cervical cancer. And the immunization will only cover the antibody A and not the antibody B. So if you get repeated exposure to the virus, if you get it more than one time and you don't have the antibody B, then your immune system then can't fight it off. And so the five-year time period in which the body can throw off the HPV virus is then extended indefinitely, and then you definitely will be predisposed to cervical cancer. So
did I hear you right then? Are you saying that the vaccination could actually make it worse?
The vaccination, after the vaccination has worked, okay, after the vaccination has produced antibody A, if you're re-exposed to the HPV virus, which 80% of Americans have some form or another of the HPV virus, some put it as high as 95%, okay, if you're re-exposed, then your immune system can't cope with it because both antibody A and B hadn't been produced. Only antibody A with the vaccine. So if you're re-exposed to the HPV virus of the specific type that causes cervical cancer, then yes, it will actually make it worse.
Huh. That's what I thought you said. Okay, so everybody needs to make a choice.
Same thing with all vaccines, though.
Right. You just had an interesting case on that. Do you want to talk about that or not?
No, not until I get all the test results in and confirm my initial impressions on it.
Okay, all right. Can you think of any other myths that we have going on that we'd like to bust right now?
We should be called the Herbal Mythbusters.
That's what we'll do. We'll be the Ghostbusters for
it. Right.
Can you think of anything else that you hear all the time that, you know, that you...
Myths.
Well, let's talk about pain. There's another one. Pain.
Okay.
All right, we have a notion in our head that pain is to be turned off at all costs. We are entitled to a pain-free existence. And I've even seen on the back of hospital doors, you're entitled to be pain-free. If your pain is on a scale of 1 to 10 or something, if it's above a 5, ask for medication or something on that order. Okay, so pain, to me, is actually an indicator.
It is.
And I, And I've heard people refer to pain as like the oil light on your car, on the dashboard of the car. If you had a light come on your car that said oil, and you go out and you clip the cord to the oil light and that turns it off, that's the way painkillers work.
Right.
You're literally just cutting off the signal and you're ignoring that there's a huge problem going on in your engine. So I like to tell people, let's find out why you have the pain, and let's eliminate the cause, and then you don't have to worry about painkillers that wreck your stomach lining, and they kill off your kidneys, and so forth and so on. And Tylenol, by the way, shuts down the liver.
Yeah.
And bypasses it.
Well, it's the whole problem with wanting to numb ourselves to physical pain or emotional pain. I mean, that's why we get addictions. You know, you look at I think probably the most addictive substance in the world, sugar, okay, or an alcohol addiction or a tobacco addiction. Nobody ever gets an addiction because they're seeking pleasure. People get addictions because they're running away from pain. They're trying to cover up and mask pain. Okay, so the same thing applies with painkillers. You know, you've got to deal with the problem, not just cover it up, whether it be physical or emotional. The problem is not going to go away until you deal with it.
Right, and it could be something like I worked with a woman who had had migraine headaches every other day from the time she was 16. Mm-hmm. She was 43 when I met her,
mm-hmm.
and was used to this as a lifestyle. You know, every other day she's down.
Right.
We did some experimenting just to find irritating substances because my experience is that first we look for food allergies. And when she eliminated sugar, wheat, and dairy altogether,
mm-hmm.
she had herself a nice week of no headaches. And when she introduced dairy back in, and that's a scientific experiment you can do for yourself on food allergies, is eliminate the food for 7 days, then bring it back in and watch see what happens. So when she introduced the dairy back in, she had the worst migraine she'd ever had, and she finally got it. So she's eliminated dairy from her diet, and sugar too, of course. That's clearly, sugar is empty calories. The FDA doesn't even have a minimum daily requirement for sugar. It is not a food. Okay, just understand that it's a chemical substance. It's been so highly refined that 9 teaspoons of white sugar is equivalent to 34 cane feet of sugar cane, and we were simply not designed to sit down and eat that much. It's like jet fuel for us, and it does create an addiction. Okay, so anyway, she stopped those two foods, and she hasn't had a migraine since. It's been 10 years.
I can't tell you the number of times that I've helped people get rid of pains, no matter what they are, by simply rehydrating them and teaching them how to breathe.
That's good, yeah.
And those are the two cheapest things you could possibly do that can get rid of pain the fastest. You know, oxygen, pain is generally your cells crying out for oxygen because of inflammation, okay? And inflammation occurs because of a lack of blood flow to an area, and there's a whole technical thing that you could go into with that. But basically, people that are dehydrated and shallow breathers are going to be in pain.
So they need to learn to take a deep breath. Another thing you can do in order to get a deeper breath is to move the we talked about Prilosec, it's used for acid reflux.
Right.
If you'll stick your fingers or your thumb right in the sternum area and pull the stomach down, it'll allow the hiatal valve to shut. It's like puts the lid on the sewer, mm-hmm. and it you'll be able to keep your digestion in the stomach and out of the esophagus. But also by pushing that down, you'll make room for your lungs to expand more.
Yeah, your diaphragm is a muscle that from misuse or unuse becomes flabby, and you just have to exercise it. You have to become a conscious breather. Pulling the stomach back down in place is extremely important, you know, and there's simple ways to do it. You physically just reach in and pull it down, or you drink, you know, 16 ounces of warm water and bounce up and down so that the water sloshes and, you know, jerks your stomach back down in place. You know, there's a lot of different things you can do, but the most important thing you can do is become a conscious breather. You know, when you breathe in, your belly should expand, not your chest. If your chest is expanding, then you're going to have knots in your shoulders and necks and headaches and all types of nasty stuff going on, not to mention not enough oxygen in your bloodstream, which means you're going to be in pain.
I just looked at the time. Thomas, we need to mention that we both teach together a class called Dr. Mom, Dr. Dad, and also one called ABC Plus D, which goes through the systems of the body and herbs and treatments that you can do for yourself, just education generally. We are scheduling these across the country, and if you're interested, you can contact either one of us on our email addresses. Mine is N Gingrich, G-I-N-G-E-R-I-C-H, at Cinci, C-I-N-C-I dot R-R dot com. And if you'd like to give yours,
yes. Mine is T, M as in Mary, E-A-S-L-E-Y. At hotmail.com, tmeasley@hotmail.com.
And we're here for you. We need to sign off now because our time is up, so we'll see you in 2 weeks. Thank you very much for listening, everybody. Good night.
Good night.